WTFR.
You see, it's cold outside.
I really can't stay.
But baby, it's cold outside.
I gotta go away.
But baby, it's cold outside.
This evening has been
hoping that you'd drop in.
So very nice.
I'll hold your hands. They're just like
my
ice.
My mother will start to worry.
Beautiful, what's your
my
hurry?
My father will be pacing the floor.
Listen to the fireplace
now,
roar.
Now really, I've got to scurry.
Beautiful, please don't hurry.
Well, maybe just a half a drink
put
more.
Put some records on while I pour.
The neighbors might
but
think.
Baby, it's bad out there.
Say, what's in the street?
No cabs to be had out there.
I wish I knew
your
how.
Your eyes are like starlight now.
To break the spell.
I'll take your hat. Your hair looks swell.
I ought to say no, no, no,
mind
sir.
If I move in closer?
At least I'm gonna say that I tried.
What's the sense in hurting my pride?
I really can't
oh,
stay.
Baby, don't hold out.
Oh,
baby,
but
it's cold outside. Nice and comfortable in here, isn't it, honey?
Yeah. I simply must
but
go.
But baby, it's cold outside.
The answer is
but
no.
But baby, it's cold outside.
The welcome has
how
been
lucky that you dropped in.
So nice and warm.
Look out the window at that storm.
My sister will be suspicious.
Gosh, your lips look delicious.
My brother will be there at the
waves
door.
Waves upon a tropical shore.
My maiden aunt's mind is vicious.
Your lips are delicious.
Or maybe just a cigarette more.
Never such a blizzard before.
I gotta get
but
home.
But baby, you'd freeze out there.
Say, lend me your
it's
coat.
It's up to your knees out there.
You've really been
I
grand.
I thrill when you touch my hand.
Oh, don't you see?
How can you do this thing to me?
There's bound to be talk tomorrow.
Think of my lifelong
at
sorrow.
At least there will be plenty implied.
If you caught pneumonia and died,
I really can't
get
stay.
Over that old doubt.
Oh,
baby,
but
it's cold. You know it's cold outside?
Yeah.
Greetings and good evening, and greetings and good morning. This is Tabitha, and you are listening to White Wellness. Hello, everybody. So today, for this show, this is a Saturday broadcast. This is a special Yule and winter solstice show. Today is the shortest day of the year in the Northern Hemisphere. It marks the beginning of going in the opposite direction, where the days start to get a bit longer, and it also marks the death of the sun. So to start out today's broadcast, I wanted to talk a little bit about the winter solstice. And this is a message that I received from a yoga studio, a Kundalini yoga studio that's near me that I've been to before. And I thought the message was pretty good and a kind of a good thing to reflect on as the year ends and as the new one begins. So I'm going to go ahead and read this message about the winter solstice. I always find myself stopping and reflecting at the time of winter solstice. First, I am struck each year by the fact that although I experience December as the beginning of really cold weather, otherwise known as winter, winter solstice, which is December 21, 2019, it is in fact the point at which we begin to move closer to the sun. Second, while winter solstice is the day that we have the longest period of darkness, it is also the day that marks a transition from increasing darkness to increasing light. From both points of view, the day offers hope. Winter solstice in 2019 not only provides this yearly opportunity to engage our own darkness and move beyond its obstacles, it is also at a threshold of a new decade and further empowered by a solar eclipse on December 26. This is a time to connect with the true nature of hope. Take this opportunity to reflect on the challenges you face, the darkness surrounding you, and find the next steps that will move you through the obstacles and toward the light of what you seek. To further engage and strengthen the possibilities, the hopes, and the new year, have a Kundalini practice to set out intentions. Here are some suggestions that could support you personally in moving from darkness to light. Set aside some time for the next 2 weeks to contemplate these questions. Here are some good questions to ask oneself to just reflect this time of year with the change going from darkness to light, with a lot of changes, change of the year, change of the decade, next year being a leap year, of course. So here are some questions to possibly reflect on. Where am I now in terms of frustrations, obstacles, and blocks? Where do I want to be? Consider this, write about it as if it has already happened. What personal qualities do I need to develop in order to accomplish this? Discipline, perhaps, or perhaps more vibrancy, energy, stamina, or confidence. What obstacles do I face in getting from where I am now to where I want to be? What habits can I create in order to support this new vision? What do I need to let go of? Possible answers could be procrastination, self-doubt, fear. List them all. What most excites me to see this vision come to life? What will it give me? And finally, when you're finished, close your eyes and spend at least 5 minutes experiencing your life with the goals and dreams accomplished. Bring in as much sensory information as you can, sound, sight, smell, taste, touch, as possible. Feel yourself fully embodying this living joy. It's just a little bit of an idea on how to reflect and move smoothly with this transitional time of year. Yeah, so I just wanted to share that with everybody. Okay, so now to move on to something else, I just want to mention something I was actually just posting in the chat right before the show started. I found this on YouTube. Sometimes people post, I guess, pictures on YouTube. It kind of, I guess, is like a functions kind of like seeing an Instagram or a Facebook post or something like that. So I saw this really mind-boggling post of this guy who decided to get a tattoo of a split neck, like a slit throat, essentially, as a reminder that he used to be a meat eater. So here's somebody trying to basically emulate death by getting this tattoo as a reminder. It's like some type of crucifixion, type of punishment, very psychologically unusual and brain-boggling. And Shield Maiden said, "We've reached peak insanity." We really have. Absolutely. I mean, just horrifyingly grotesque from an aesthetic perspective as well as a philosophical one. Yeah. All right. So next, I wanted to talk a little bit about the Amanita muscaria. And that is a mushroom. And when I was doing a show with Mike recently, we touched upon this when we were talking about some other stuff and talking about the Smurfs, that cartoon from back in the 80s. So the Amanita muscaria is this mushroom that is white and red, much like Santa's suit, as well as the tops of those mushroom houses in the Smurfs. It's also known as flying agaric mushroom as well. So I just wanted to play this little video, or audio rather, for you guys that talks about it. And in this video, it features Terrence McKenna. And for all of you guys who have been following me since my beginning of doing this program, yes, I did do a show in the past featuring Terrence McKenna where I basically said he was a gatekeeper. I still believe that he is a gatekeeper. However, he is spot on when he's talking about the esoteric meaning of the Amanita muscaria or the flying agaric. So, Sean, whenever you're ready, can you play the Santa mushroom clip, please?
When people discuss magic mushrooms, they're most often talking about psilocybin-containing species. These mushrooms work on 5-HT, or serotonergic receptors, in your brain, just like the other classical psychedelics, such as LSD and DMT. But there is an entirely separate variety of hallucinogenic mushrooms as well. Mushrooms like Amanita muscaria and the similar Amanita pantherina contain ibutenic acid and the GABA agonist Musimol, a sedative hypnotic and hallucinogenic compound. These Amanita or fly agaric mushrooms have a well-documented history of use in Siberia. There is increasing support for the theory that the modern Santa Claus myth and Christmas traditions in general evolved out of Siberian shamanic rituals. Once again, Terrence McKenna put it best.
An example of how a very ancient, folk way can be incorporated into our culture without us even realizing it and is provided by discussing Amanita muscaria. If you go to the Encyclopedia Britannica and you look up Santa Claus, they'll tell you that it has to do with Saint Nicholas and it got started in the 11th century. And it's a, but when you look at the Santa Claus story, it's a perfect mythologem to analyze from this point of view, because look what's going on with Santa Claus. First of all, Santa Claus's colors are red and white, the colors of the Amanita muscaria, for sure. Santa Claus lives at the North Pole. What does this mean? It means that Santa Claus lives at the Axis Mundi, where Yggdrasil, the magic world ash of Welsh mythology, has taken root. Santa Claus flies. This is what shamans do. Santa Claus is the master of the reindeer, the animal most associated with the Amanita muscaria. Santa Claus is aided in his work by troops of elves. And what is the work of Santa Claus? To build toys for children. Remember the DMT thing? Saying, look at this, look at this. Well, those were off-duty elves, clearly. So here are all the motifs. And I believe that for children in our culture, that all the Christer stuff is not what Christmas is about. Christmas is about standing in front of the tree on Christmas morning with the gifts arrayed and the twinkling lights on. Well, that tree is the tree that the Amanita muscaria forms its symbiotic relationship to. It's always spruce or pine that it has a mycorrhizal relationship to. So the number of motifs relating Santa Claus to a cult of Amanita muscaria, there's almost nothing but relational motifs there, and yet if you suggest this to people, they just back away in horror, you know.
What McKenna left out in this clip, though, is a very important property of Musimol. Unlike most drugs, Musimol is still active after being passed through the urine. Legend has it that shaman would sometimes drink the urine of reindeer who had regularly consumed Amanitas, as it was considered safer than eating the mushrooms directly, having been filtered through the reindeer's bladder to remove potentially hazardous toxins. With that said, there's considerable documented evidence of shaman preparing and consuming the mushrooms directly to interface with the spirit world.
Okay, I hope that was enjoyable, that little clip. Interesting how it all kind of ties together with something that most people would never probably want to associate themselves with, because they have, I guess, fear about it or preconceived notions that are incorrect. But yeah, the Santa story really lines up very nicely with magic mushrooms. So I just wanted to just elaborate a bit more on this and mention a couple of other things that that audio didn't mention. So here's a bit more about how magic mushrooms or Amanita muscaria or flying agaric explain the Santa Claus story. The story of Santa and his flying reindeer can be traced to an unlikely source, hallucinogenic or, quote, magic mushrooms. Santa is a modern counterpart of a shaman who consumed mind-altering plants and fungi to commune with the spirit world. This is being said by an anthropologist. Here are eight ways a hallucinogenic mushroom explains the story of Santa and his reindeer. Well, one is that Arctic shamans gave out mushrooms on the winter solstice. According to the theory, the legend of Santa derives from shamans in the Siberian and Arctic regions who dropped into locals' teepee homes with a bag full of hallucinogenic mushrooms as a present in late December. As the story goes, up until a few hundred years ago, these practicing shamans or priests connected to the older traditions would collect Amanita muscaria, the holy mushroom, dry them, and then give them as gifts on the winter solstice. Because snow is usually blocking the doors, there was an opening in the roof through which entered and exited, thus the chimney story. Number two, mushrooms, like gifts, are found beneath pine trees. That's just one of the symbolic connections between Amanita muscaria, mushroom, and the iconography of Christmas. According to several historians and ethnomycologists, or people who study the fungi's influence on human societies, In the book Mushrooms and Mankind, James Arthur points out that Amanita muscaria, also known as the flying agaric, lives throughout the northern hemisphere under conifers and birch trees, with which the fungi, which are deep red with the white flecks, have a symbiotic relationship. This particularly explains the practice of the Christmas tree and the placement of bright red and white presents underneath it, which look like Amanita mushrooms. Why do people bring pine trees into their houses at the winter solstice, placing brightly colored red and white packages under their boughs as gifts to show their love for each other? It is because underneath the pine bough is the exact location where one would find the most sacred substance, the Amanita muscaria, in the wild. The next reason is the reindeer were shaman or spirit animals. Reindeer are common in Siberia and northern Europe and seek out these hallucinogenic fungi, as the area's human inhabitants have also been known to do. One biologist should suggest that Siberian tribesmen who ingested flying agaric may have hallucinated that the grazing reindeers were flying. At first glance, one thinks it's ridiculous, but it's not. Whoever heard of reindeer flying? I think it's becoming general knowledge that Santa is taking a trip with his reindeer. Amongst the Siberian shamans, you have an animal spirit you can journey with in your vision quest, and reindeer are common and familiar to people in eastern Siberia. See, it all kind of ties together so far, doesn't it? Shaman dressed like Santa Claus. These shamans also have a tradition of dressing up like the mushroom. They sport red suits with white spots. Another reason is mushrooms abound in Christmas iconography, and that's definitely true, especially if you look at a lot of vintage greeting cards from yesteryear. They'll have images of children with mushrooms. Also, if you look at vintage cards for Yule and Christmas from yesteryear, you'll see swastikas. You can actually find a good card that you can print out, color, and just put it like as a gift tag or a card for somebody, and it will have a swastika on it, as well as some holiday iconography. Yeah, I made gift tags for everyone last year with things like that. Anyway, mushrooms abound in the Christmas iconography. Tree ornaments shaped like the Amanita muscaria mushroom and other depictions of the fungi are also prevalent in Christmas decorations throughout the world, particularly in Scandinavia and Northern Europe. The connection between modern-day Christmas and the ancestral practice of eating mushrooms is a coincidence, this person is saying. That doesn't sound like it's a coincidence at all. Maybe this person means a coincidence, or they're trying to, I don't know, divert, but I don't think that's a coincidence. Rudolph's nose resembles a bright red mushroom. Rudolph is another example of the mushroom imagery resurfacing. His nose looks exactly like a red mushroom. It's amazing that a reindeer with a red mushroom nose is at the head leading the others. Many of these traditions were merged or projected upon Saint Nicholas, a 4th century saint known for his generosity. There is little debate about the consumption of mushrooms by Arctic and Siberian tribespeople and shamans, but the connection to Christmas traditions is more tenuous or mysterious. Well, I think this is all just the origin of what we have now today, what we call Christmas, which is very much a far cry from even, I guess, more of the traditional Yule practices, but also a far cry from what it was back in the day. But there are still many things that tie it all together. And many of the most enjoyable parts of this time of year are the ones that are pagan or heathen. It's not the stuff that got picked up, you know, when this became a Christian holiday. The best parts about this holiday is great food, you know, family and friends, trees, wreaths, all the traditional stuff. Like, that's the best stuff. That's the highlight. It isn't all the, you know, the Christ stuff that came later on. Another similarity that explains the Santa mushroom story: a visit from Saint Nicholas may have been borrowed from the shaman rituals. Many of the modern details of the modern day America in Santa Claus come from the 1823 poem "A Visit from Saint Nicholas," which later became known as "Twas the Night Before Christmas." This poem is credited to Clement Clark Moore, an aristocrat academic who lived in New York City. The origins of Moore's visions are unclear, although Arthur, Rush, and Ruck, these are all the biologists in the article thus far, all think the poet probably drew from Northern European motifs that delve from Siberian or Arctic shamanic traditions. At the very least, Santa's sleigh, and reindeer are probably references to various related Northern European mythology. For example, the Norse god Thor, known in German as Donner, flew in a chariot drawn by two goats, which had been replaced in the modern retelling by Santa's reindeer. Other historians were unaware of a connection between Santa and the shamans or magic mushrooms. Well, I guess, you know, they're more kosher historians, I guess you'd call those people. And finally, Santa is from the Arctic. One historian believes that the theory of a mushroom-Santa connection is flawed. If you look at the evidence of Siberian shamanism, which I've done, you find that shamans didn't travel by sleigh, didn't usually deal with reindeer spirits, very rarely took the mushrooms to get into trances, didn't have red and white clothing. But another historian, or two rather, disagree, saying shamans did deal with reindeer spirits and the ingestion of mushrooms is well documented. Siberian shamans did wear red deer pelts, but the coloring of Santa's garb is mainly meant to mirror the coloring of the Amanita muscaria mushrooms. As for the sleigh, the point isn't the exact mode of travel, but that the, quote, trip involves transportation to a different celestial realm. Sometimes people also drink the urine of the shaman or the reindeer, as the hallucinogenic compounds are excreted, and this way without some of the harmful chemicals being present in the fungi. People who know about shamanism accept the story. Is there any other reason that Santa lives in the North Pole? It is a tradition that can be traced back to Siberia. And yes, it definitely can. The people who don't believe it just, I guess, maybe believe other stuff. Possibly, or just too kosher to go there mentally. But yeah, pretty interesting information there. Really kind of sets the scene for the season, lets you know what is of the old ways and what is of the new ways, and all the materialism and all that stuff. That obviously is not traditional. That stuff, that sucks. I know it's true, but it kind of takes the Xmas spirit out of things. Okay, I mean, I don't know. I think it kind of just sees like the whole picture, you know? The whole, like, big picture of everything all together. But, yeah, I guess if you've known the Christmas story and then you hear these types of things, it does, you know, give it, like, a bit of a different spin or a different feel. So I can relate to that for sure. Yeah. Oh, okay. Gotcha. Okay, Sean, didn't realize. Okay, so this didn't take the Xmas spirit up. But anyway, yeah, a little different perspective of how to look at things. And how to just, you know, see it in a different way than what we just know today. And so many things are just done out of tradition. I mean, growing up as a child, I'm probably not alone with this. Probably a lot of people just, you know, they went through these traditions as a child and really didn't know a lot of the historical essence of it. No matter whether they were religious or not, they just didn't really know any of the history of it. So interesting to go over this type of stuff, I think. Okay, so that's all I wanted to say about the Amanita muscaria. And all that type of stuff. So now let's play that rad song, if you don't mind, Sean.
Die Himmel jagen im Tanz.
Okay, that was one of our festive songs for the evening. It looks like we have a break coming up in just a moment. But before we go to break, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the winter blues, or what they call seasonal affective disorder. It has the same acronym, SAD, as the Standard American Diet, which is unfortunate. But I guess it makes sense, because people do get sad when they have seasonal affective disorder, and they do get sad when they eat the SAD diet. So I guess it's really not a lie. But oftentimes people do tend to get a little bummed out this time of year. And it's usually due not just to lack of light, but it can be because of, nutrient reasons and things of that nature. People spending more time inside, eating more carbohydrates and stuff like that. Like oftentimes they'll refer to this time of year as, quote, flu season. No, it's the eat shit and stay indoors season. They just call it flu season. But people tend to just have more carbohydrate cravings, be more sedentary, spend more time inside. And it's always good, like I said in that walk I took the other day, to get outside. Even if you don't want to, just get outside for a couple of minutes and you'll feel a lot better. So this SAD stuff, this seasonal affective disorder, is considered to be a form of depression that occurs in the fall and winter months. Probably a response to the shorter hours of daylight. And of course, that's one aspect, but also food choices, staying inside, watching more media, things like that. You get fatigued, you lose interest in normal activities, social withdrawal, weight gain, craving for carbohydrate food, all the stuff that would normally be associated with being bummed or being depressed. And what else can I say about this? So yeah, getting bright light first thing in the morning is really important. That's really good just in general, but especially if you want to not get sad or not get bummed this time of year when we do have less light. Oh, there is our break. We'll be right back.
Absolute morality, the absolute morality that a religious person might profess would include what? Stoning people for adultery, death for apostasy, punishment for breaking the Sabbath. These are all things which are religiously based absolute moralities. I don't think I want an absolute morality. I think I want a morality that is thought out, reasoned, argued, discussed, and...
In the sunshine of your love. I'm with you, my love. The light shining through on you.
Yes, I'm with you, my love. It's the morning just we two.
I'll stay with you, darling.
And we are back. And I was just talking a little bit about seasonal affective disorder. So you want to get lots of light, but also do some activities, walking outdoors, yoga, stretching, weights, things like that. And also making sure you have enough vitamin D in the diet, eating vitamin D rich foods. A duck egg is a good source of vitamin D. And remember, the lighter your skin is, the less vitamin D or the less time in the sun you need to get vitamin D. Just a couple of things to be mindful of in general, but especially this time of year when people tend to get bummed. But I think one of the best ways to stay without being bummed, to stay bum free, which would be just to embrace the seasons. If you get like annoyed every time it becomes winter, yeah, of course you're going to get upset or depressed. Just embrace it. Learn to like it more. Be one with it, not like in a, you know, universal type of like New Ager way, but just fall into it. Don't get caught up in hating it and waiting for it to be over. The more you enjoy it, the better it'll feel. Yeah. Winter can fuck itself, Tabs. Well, yeah, I mean, I like it. I like four seasons. We have four seasons in my area where I live, and I like it. I do. I really do like it. I think I like it more. I liked it when I was a child, too, but I guess for a couple of years, I didn't like it. Another thing that will make you like winter more is eating to support your body in the winter. Like if someone's living in a colder climate or an area that gets cold, like my area per se, if they're eating lots of salads and lots of, you know, icy type of stuff in this cold climate, they're not going to be able to have any tolerance for the cold. But I notice the more I eat to harmonize or acclimate with my climate, the easier it is for me to spend long periods of time outside and not get cold. So yeah, eating foods that support the energy of the winter and the fall season are really important, just like it would be for the spring and the summer, of course. So here is a cool list that I found of things we do every Christmas that all are pagan. And these are some of the highlights, some of the things that everyone loves, like children love, adults love, older folks love. Like these are all the things that people do, from, you know, symbolism and, you know, buying things, setting things up, rituals, etc. And these are all totally pagan in origin. So the first is the Christmas tree. No surprise there. It is a 17th century pagan German tradition of bringing greenery into the home as a symbol of the spring yet to come. Another pagan symbol is the Yule log and mistletoe. The Celts and the Gaels burned logs as a druidic solstice ceremony to cleanse the past year and welcome the new. And they gathered mistletoe for the festival of Alban Arthurian, or Yule, first described in white writing by Roman historian Pliny the Elder. And that he lived from AD 23 to AD 79. Father Christmas or Santa Claus? According to this article, he is a mixture of the tale of the Turkish Saint Nicholas and the German Kris Kringle, or the Dutch Sinterklaas. Midwinter festivals. If you happen to live in a region in which midwinter brings striking darkness and cold and hunger, then the urge to have a celebration at the very heart of it to avoid getting mad or falling into deep depression is very, very strong. So just reading that little tidbit, makes me think that our ancestors always knew that something like sad could be on the horizon if we had the wrong outlet or a foul attitude towards the season of the dead. That's what winter is. Winter represents death, and then spring is the resurrection. So right now we're in the death of the season. But every year this happens. Every year we have a death, and every year we have a birth. It's that classic cycle of birth, life, death, rebirth, what they call in Kundalini Yoga. The mantra is Sa, Ta, Na, Ma. It's a constant, constant cycle. It just kind of makes me think of these climate tards who are always thinking that, you know, this is going to happen. The earth is going to die if we don't do this. Like, the earth is in the constant stage of renewal and exfoliation. It's the people who are stuck on stagnant, not the earth. The next thing is Christmas Day. The Bible gives no reference onto when Jesus was born. It was marked on at least three different dates, and those include 29th of March, 6th of January, and sometimes in June. It wasn't until Pope Julius I in 340 AD moved it to 25 of December. This was conveniently used to convert pagans, since it coincided with the two major pre-Christian festivals, Roman Bacchanalia or Saturnalia. I think that was kind of a real festive occasion, where feasting, orgies, that type of thing, and the various Yules celebrated by the Norse, the Gaels, and the Celts. Another thing that is totally pagan is stockings and gift giving, a mashed up tradition of St. Nicholas tossing coins down the chimney of the needy families and of setting out shoes with hay in so Odin's horse Sleipnir would leave them treats. And caroling. Caroling started in Victorian England. Every holiday has door-to-door singing well-wishers. Every single Christian tradition was taken from a pagan tradition or a religion. For fun, read about Isis and Horus, Devaki and Krishna, Anahita and Mithra, which all predate Christianity and detail the immaculate births of the Savior. And 16th century Protestants in England and New England even forbade celebrating the holiday. Interesting. And that makes me think of something I just saw the other day. I took a screenshot of it. The Jesus myth, of course, I think most of us are familiar with, but there are four other people who came before Jesus in terms of history, and they all have a very similar story to Jesus. And the first one would be Horus, and this goes back to 5,000 years ago. This is in Egypt. Horus was born of a virgin star in the east, walked on water. He healed the sick, restored sight, was crucified dead for 3 days and resurrected. And then years later, about 3,200 years ago, came Mithra. And this was an Iranian or a Persian god, born of a virgin birth, born on December 25th, star in the east, had 12 disciples, performed miracles, dead for 3 days, and resurrected. Then later on came Krishna, and that's in the Aryan traditions of India, 2,900 years ago. Born of a virgin star in the east, performed miracles, called the Son of God and son of a carpenter, and he was resurrected. Then, in 2,500 years ago, came Dionysus, and that would be, I believe, Greek. Born of a virgin, born on December 25th, traveling teacher, turned water into wine and called a holy child. And then 2,000 years ago came Jesus, and he supposedly did all of the above. So this is an old story that it seems like a different actor is playing him in a different time period, essentially. Interesting to see how that all ties in like that. Yeah, very much so. Okay, let's just X that out. Okay, so now I'd like to move on and play one of these clips. I'm going to break this into a couple of different pieces for this, so I can just kind of come back and, you know, chat and do that type of stuff. But I want to go over this little audio about the origins of Yule. I think it's a really good piece. It's about 20 minutes long. So, Sean, if you don't mind, if you can play the first piece of the origins of Yule audio.
hearth is kindled, snow is falling, and Christmas trees litter the street. Once again, December is upon us, and with it, the holiday spirit. Today, even in our secular age, Christmas remains one of the most important times of the year. A time of giving, a time of sharing, and one of long-standing traditions. This is not to say, however, that no parts of Christmas have been lost in modern times. Secularity and so-called progress are relentless enemies of tradition, and many parts of Christmas have slowly been eroded away through modern profanity. Despite this, Christmas remains a bulwark of old customs and folklore. Its essence remains intact and untouchable. The traditions that are now disappearing are mostly those of fervent Christianity, church visits, invocations of saints, and the like. All are new additions, ultimately foreign to the celebration, and thus easily lost. What has survived, despite attacks, is the ancient core, the heart of Christmastide, and it is thoroughly pagan in nature. In this video, I will dive into the origins of the Christmas traditions and explore the pre-Christian spirit that still pervades the holiday today. This is a broad topic, as a great deal of our traditions have pagan roots, but I will try to cover it as inclusively and factually as I can. To begin understanding the original, deeply Germanic roots of Christmas, we must first distance ourselves from that very name. Christmas, derived from Old English Christi Messe, or Christ's Mass, is a renaming of the original festival. The name first appeared in the 11th century, but the holiday itself is far, far older, and through all of that time, it was known by another name, Yule. Yule, or Yuletide, is an ancient name, traceable back to a common Proto-Germanic root, which it shares with Yule, or Yule, the Norse name for the holiday. Here in the Nordics, Yule is still the name of Christmas, one of many signs that the old ways remain stronger here than in much of Europe. As the word goes back all the way to the common ancestor of all Germanic languages, we know that the celebration itself must also be as old as the Germanic peoples themselves. For as long as there have been Teutons, there has also been Yule. Yuletide was a term for the celebration itself, but was also considered a month, spanning the deepest parts of winter. This was a harsh and dreary time, one of relentless snow and long, freezing nights. At the very height of this month, midwinter, the darkest point, was Yule. It's not hard to see why such a frightful time would have motivated the old Teutons to seek the help of the gods and land spirits. At the same time, such a festival was a distraction from the misery and uncertainty that abounded. Sheltered from the raging winter within the sturdy walls of a temple, the people would gather around a warm hearth. Here they would toast the gods while drinking the holy ale, the nectar of the Aesir, mead, or mule. The Yule festival was centered around a great feast, accompanied by copious amounts of drinking. Here, people would beckon to the land spirits, ancestors, and gods. One god in particular had a significant role in Yule, but we'll get to him soon. One of the ways in which the gods were invoked was through sacrifice. As the Heimskringla recounts, livestock of various kinds were brought into the temple, including sacred horses, where they were slaughtered. Their blood was then gathered onto so-called sacrificial twigs and sprinkled onto the walls of the temple and the idols of the gods, along with all of the men attending the festival. The meat was then consumed, completing the sacrifice. One such sacrifice was the Sonargultur, a boar from which two modern Christmas traditions at least partly descend. This animal, also known as a Yule boar, was led before the king, after which all of the people would lay their hands upon it and take vows. Due to the sacred context, these vows then became oaths, ones that people were compelled to uphold. Here we see a tradition of people pledging vows for the next year at midwinter, and it is from here that our tradition of New Year's resolutions descends. The boar was an animal associated with the god Frey, or Frey in Danish. After sacrificing the boar, its flesh was eaten, imploring Frey to be favorable during the coming year. This practice survived the coming of Christianity by replacing Frey with the Saint Stephen, and to this day, the Christmas ham remains an important part of the traditional Yule menu. Beyond the walls of the temple, the winter world of the ancient Germanic peoples was a dangerous place. When the days grew short, the barriers between the living and the dead likewise withered, as the denizens of hell had emerged into Midgard. Spirits abounded at this time, and the ultimate culmination of this was a ghostly procession of hunters riding through the night. This tradition too survived Christianity, and in the 12th century, the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle reports as follows. Let no one be surprised at what we are about to relate, for it was common gossip up and down the countryside that after the 6th of February, many people both saw and heard a whole pack of huntsmen in full cry. They straddled black horses and black bucks, while their hounds were pitch black with staring, hideous eyes. This was seen in the very deer park of Peterborough town, and in all of the woods stretching from that same spot as far as Stamford. All through the night, monks heard them sounding and winding their horns. Reliable witnesses who kept watch in the night declared that there might well have been 20 or even 30 of them in this wild tantivy, as near as they could tell. So went the account from the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle, and there are many others like it. Over the fields and through the woods of deepest winter, this ethereal host rode across the land, seeding fear in the hearts of those it encountered. This was the wild hunt, the fears of winter made manifest. The leader of the hunt has varied somewhat over the years, with local folkloric figures occasionally heading it. But one character is deeply identified with the hunt. Odin. His prominence is demonstrated by the local names of the wild hunt across the Germanic world. In England, it was known as Woden's Hunt. In Scandinavia, Odin's Jagd, both of the same meaning. And in Germany, as Wotan's Heer, Odin's Army. Other mythic characters also made appearances, but most appear to have been other names for the Allfather. And even when they weren't, it could be said that Odin was never far behind. In the old Germanic faith, Odin had many roles, and one of them was as god of the dead. The hunt was a key aspect of Yuletide, and one that has given rise to an aspect of modern Christmas, superficially so dissimilar, it can be hard to believe. Good old Santa is a jolly fellow with a big belly and a sack full of presents.
Okay, and that was a little bit about some of the origins of Christmas with some fun sound effects right there. I hope that was educational and informative and enjoyable. So next, I just wanted to mention some of the foods and drink that people like to have this time of year. And there's a bunch of things that are seasonal. Some of them are things that we associate with the Christmas season, and some are just foods that we associate more with just, I'd say, this time of year, fall and winter and all that type of stuff. So here's a partial list of some of the foods that are very much foods and drink of Yule. And that would be cookies and caraway cakes. So things like cookies and cakes made with caraway, fruits, nuts, dishes of pork, like that video clip just said, or wild boar, turkey, eggnog, ginger tea, spiced cider, wassail, and lamb's wool, which is an ale made with nutmeg and roasted apples. That was new to me. As well as taking in apples, mulled wine, beans, and oranges. So lots of lovely food for this time of year, absolutely. And lots of different traditions go along with those foods as well. So let's read a little bit about some of the traditions that are symbolic of Yule. When the days grow colder and the nights grow longer, people of the ancient times would light candles and gather around the fires to lure back the sun. They would bring out their stores of food and enjoy feasting and festivities. Dances were danced and songs were sung, and all would delight in decorating their homes. Evergreens for Yule. The evergreen tree was cut and brought indoors to symbolize the life, the rebirth, and the renewal. They were thought to have power over death because their green never faded, and they were used to defeat winter demons and hold back death and destruction. Because of their strength and tenacity, they were also believed to encourage the sun's return. Another thing is the Christmas holly. Holly, which represents the masculine element, was often used to decorate doors, windows, and fireplaces. Because of its prickliness, it was thought to capture or ward off evil spirits before they could enter a home and cause harm. The holly leaves, symbolic of the Holly King, represent hope and the red berries represent potency. Another tradition would be mistletoe. Mistletoe, which often represents the female element, so holly is the male and mistletoe is the female, also hold much importance as it was used by druid priests in special ceremonies during the winter solstice. They believe that its green leaves represented the fertility of the mother goddess, and its white berries, the seed of the forest god or oak king. Druids would harvest the mistletoe from sacred oak trees with golden scythes, and maidens would gather underneath the trees to catch the falling branches, preventing them from falling to the ground. For, if this happened, it was believed that all sacred energy in the plant would pour back into the earth. The branches and sprigs were then divided and distributed to be hung over doorways as protection against thunder, lightning, and other evils. Mistletoe was also worn as an amulet for fertility or hung above the headboard. And here's a bit more about the Yule tree, which is definitely 100% a pagan symbol, the Christmas tree, the Yule tree. The Yule tree was also another important symbol in pagan tradition. Originally, it represented the tree of life or the world tree, the Yggdrasil, also known among the early pagans. In ancient times, it was decorated with gifts people wanted to receive from the gods. It was adorned with natural ornaments such as pine cones, berries, and other fruit, as well as symbols sacred to the gods and the goddesses. In some holiday traditions, garlands of popcorn and berries were strung around the tree so that visiting birds could feed off the tree as well. Another symbol is the Yule log. And this custom of burning of the Yule log began with the ancient Scandinavians who burned the huge log, a felled from the ash tree, to honor the god Thor. In the Celtic tradition, a continual hearth fire was kept to prevent spirits from entering the home. In order for the fire to keep burning, a large oak tree was felled and brought into the home where the tree was placed trunk first into the hearth, with the last remnants set aside to burn with the next year's fire. It was also believed that the longer the Yule log burned, the faster the sun would come to warm the earth. And here are some other traditions of the Yule and Christmas and what they basically mean. Candles were another way to have an eternal flame within the home. They symbolized light and warmth of the sun and were used to chase away evils to lure back the returning sun or sun. And that's spelled S-U-N or S-O-N. Wreaths, another lovely aspect of the season. Wreaths were also traditional in ancient times, for they symbolized the wheel of the year and the completion of another cycle. They were made of evergreens and adorned with cones and berries and hung as decoration throughout the home. They were also given as gifts to symbolize the infinity of goodwill, friendship, and joyfulness. Bells. Bells were often rung during the winter solstice to drive away demons that surfaced during the dark time of the year. They were rung in the morning as everyone began to wake and chase away the dark days and herald in the warmer, brighter days following the solstice. Elves. Elves first became associated with Yule because the ancients knew that the spirits that created the sun inhabited the land of elves. By including elves in the Yule celebrations, the ancients believed they were assuring the elves' assistance in the coercion of the sun to return. And here's one of the foods that's associated with the Yule season and what this means, and that's gingerbread. One of my favorites. I really like the smell of this. It's very seasonal smelling, and it tastes really good too. Gingerbread was considered to be a specialty bread during this time, since ginger had not yet been available until the Crusaders brought it back in the 11th century. There were strict laws regarding specialty breads in that time, so gingerbread was only allowed to be produced during the holidays, and thus it became associated with winter and Yule. Another food is wassail. Wassail derives from the Old English word wais, hail, which means be well, be hail, or good health. It is a strong drink, usually a mixture of ale, honey, and spices, or mulled apple cider. When pagans went into the forest to fell the great oak for the Yule log, they would anoint the tree with wassail and bedeck them with wassail-soaked cakes. Thus, the ritual of wassailing was born. At home, the wassail would be poured into a large bowl during feast time, and the host, when greeting his or her guests, would lift and drink and wish them was hail, to which they would reply, drink hail, which meant drink and be well. That's one of the aspects of the Yule, is that people would always tend to feast on food and feast on alcohol, from what I've read doing research for this. Caroling, which you mentioned a little bit before, was also a popular Yule tradition when young children honored the winter solstice with song. They would go through the villages, singing door to door. The villagers, in return, would reward them with tokens and sweets and small gifts, which symbolized the food and prosperity given by the Mother Goddess to all her earthly children. Nature symbols of Yule. So here are some of the things that exist naturally in nature that are very much associated with the Yuletide. And that would be holly, oak, mistletoe, ivy, evergreens, laurel, bayberry, blessed thistle, frankincense, pine, sage, and yellow cedar. And the colors that are represented for Yule would be red, green, white, silver, and gold. Those are definitely all very much Christmassy colors too. And the red is said to represent the waning holly king, also could represent, of course, the Amanita muscaria mushroom. Green represents the waxing oak king. White represents the purity and the hope of new light, also snow. Silver represents the moon, and gold represents the sun or sun. And some of the crystals or stones associated with Yule would be rubies, bloodstones, garnets, emeralds, and diamonds. And the activities of Yule would be caroling, wassailing the trees, burning the Yule log, decorating the Yule tree, exchanging gifts, and kissing under the mistletoe. And a lot of those are very much considered Christmas things as well. As opposed to burning the Yule log in the house, I mean, some of us still do that. Not everyone has a live fireplace anymore, but sometimes people will make those cakes of the Yule log. You've probably seen those before. It's usually a chocolate or a vanilla cake, and they make it look like it's a log. They do something where they use a cake comb so it looks all like wiggly, like bark. But that's a modern day incarnation of the Yule log. And here are some of the deities associated with Yule. Oh, there is our break. We'll be right back.
I don't think I want to know a six-year-old who isn't a dreamer or a silly heart. And I sure don't want to know one who takes their student career seriously. I don't have a college degree. I don't even have a job. But I know a good kid when I see one. Because they're all good kids. Until dried-out, brain-dead skags like you drag them down and convince them they're no good. You so much as scowl at my niece or any other kid in this school and I hear about it, I'm coming looking for you. Take this quarter. Go downtown and have a rat gnaw that thing off your face.
Well, I'm a love struck, baby, I must confess. Life without you, darling, this is a silent mess. Thinking about you, baby, give me such a thrill. I gotta have you, baby, can't get my fill. Take a fool to forget. I saw a ton of bricks that hit me in the head. And watch you too little, baby, I ain't over it yet. Every time I see you make me feel so fine. Heart beating crazy, my blood running wild. Love and make me feel like a mighty, mighty man. Love me, baby, ain't I your man? I'm a love-struck baby. Yeah, I'm a love-struck baby. You got me love-struck, baby.
WTFR.
Magic, you're right where I wanna be.
And we are back. And I was just talking a little bit about some of the symbols and traditions of Yule that are very much a follow over or a crossover into Christmas. And just wanted to finish off this article by mentioning some of the deities of Yule. And some of the goddesses associated with Yule would be the Great Mother and the Earth goddesses, Freya, Gaia, Diana, Bona Dea, Isis, and Demeter. And some of the gods or male deities associated with Yule would be Mabon, the sun god, the star, divine child, the oak king, the holly king, the green man, the red man, the horned one, Odin, Lu, Apollo, and Ra. So pretty interesting to see how so many things we do today are very much tied to yesteryear. Yeah, and I think it's nice, like Josh was saying in the chat earlier, that it's nice to kind of do a bit of everything. You don't have to be Christian to enjoy celebrating Christmas culturally with friends and family like I do. I really never considered myself a Christian, certainly always every day less so. But I was baptized Catholic, really never did anything with it, never believed it. Always wondered my whole life since I was really small, before I even got any of my later schooling, which would be in philosophy and religion, I always wondered why we would want anything to do with a God that had to do with the desert. I wondered that as a child, and I'm like, what does that have to do with me? I'm like, I'm not from the desert. So why would I want to believe or worship this guy from the desert? So that was just my small mind, not small, just young mind, rather, wondering that thing out. So you don't have to be Christian to enjoy the festivities of the season. I know some people like to say Jesus is the reason for the season. Well, for some people it is, but for me, it's celebrating the solstice. It's eating good food, spending time with good people, and reflecting on the year and just emerging of the old traditions as well as the new things. That's what it's about. You don't have to necessarily be, you know, an Abrahamic person to enjoy this season, and I enjoy it very much, and I'm not. So I think it's important that we enjoy these festivities, even if they sometimes have an onlay of things we don't believe in. We can still enjoy them and find them pleasurable in our own way. Yeah. So Sean, if you don't mind, could you possibly play maybe like some Celtic Highland Christmas music? Thank you. Okay. That was nice. A little bit of a festive Celtic music right there. Yeah. So now back to a little bit more about the Yuletide, the Yule holiday. Yeah. And this is all about the sun dying and being resurrected. That's the real reason for the season. Yeah, that's what it's really all about. It's the great cycle of birth, life, death, and rebirth. It's the constant cycle right there. Yeah. Let's check the chat for a moment. Okay, not too much going on in the chat right there. So yeah, it's all about the sun's return. This is, like I said earlier, the shortest day of the year. We are in the sign of Scorpio now too. I'm seeing here I have a lunar phase calendar. Yep. It only goes to the 25th of December. But yeah, we have just gone into the moon being in Scorpio. Okay. A little bit more about the food. Let's see if we've mentioned anything else about the food. Goose, another traditional food this time of year would be goose or venison. Other foods that would be acceptable this time of year. Eggnog is something else that's also nice, sometimes made with alcohol, sometimes not. That's a nice beverage as well. Yep. Marzipan, that's something else that people make this time of year, oftentimes taking what's a little almond paste. That's what marzipan is. It's a German thing, and it's almond paste, which is sculpted into little different birds and animals, holly, mistletoe, things like that. Yeah. All right, so why don't we play the second clip for the German origins of Yule, Sean, if you have a moment?
He's also heavily identified with the historical figure of St. Nicholas, a real person who was indeed known for giving gifts to the poor in ancient Anatolia, now Turkey. How, then, could the tradition of Santa Claus possibly have pagan roots? Well, for one, the very word jolly may originally have been a French form of the Old Norse jol, that is, Yule. The story of the actual character of Santa, however, is more complicated. It's one that involves syncretism, the process in which aspects of two or more religions merge. The interplay of the Germanic faith and Christianity is a fascinating topic and one that deserves its own video. But to put a very long story short, the modern character of Santa Claus is based on both Saint Nicholas and Odin. In the centuries after his death, a day of gift-giving to children was created in veneration of him. The date of this was originally the 6th of December, but was moved to Christmas after the Protestant Revolution, while Saint Nicholas himself was renamed Santa Claus, both as part of the Protestant suppression of saint worship. Thus, the very name Santa Claus itself comes from Saint Nick, and so does the tradition of giving gifts to children. The similarities between this and a god of the dead leading wraiths across the sky may seem non-existent, but this is merely superficial. Instead of seeing Jolly Nick, consider now Santa as a white-bearded old man in a hood and cloak, riding across the northern skies in the depths of winter with his ethereal host, rewarding those he deems worthy and punishing those who are not. In the folk faith of the Teutons, Odin was also known as Jolnir, the Yule One, and Jauluheira, the Master of Yule. The Wild Hunt was a cruel and dangerous horde, but the Allfather, as Lord of the Festival, also bestowed boons upon those who worshipped and did well with sacrifice. While Father Christmas travels across the world unseen with his flying reindeer, the Allfather passed through the nine worlds on his eight-legged horse, Sleipnir. In this way, it can be said that though the name and certain traditions of Santa come from St. Nicholas, the cultural foundation of a winter gift-bringer was already firmly established and provided a basis for the tradition onto which a Christian image was merely painted. The influence of Nicholas is undeniable, but it is also skin-deep. Another essential Yule figure is the house spirit. The house spirit is most prominent in the north, where we refer to it as Nissen in Denmark and Norway, and Tomten in Swedish. Though these wights are an essential part of Yuletide in the Nordics, no exact translation of the word exists in English. It seems that this particular tradition died out in the Anglo-Saxon Yule, or perhaps was never as big a part of Yule as it is, and always has been, in the Norse faith. Today, Nissa are often translated as being a Nordic version of the Christmas elves, but this isn't quite accurate. Christmas elves were invented in the US during the 19th century, and don't have any obvious folkloric past. Despite this, their appearance is similar enough to the Norse house spirits that some sort of connection probably did exist. One can draw comparisons with the Celtic Fae and the pagan Fair Folk. Nissa, in contrast, are a direct continuation of the Old Norse tradition practiced before the coming of Christianity. In the Germanic faith, the lines between lesser gods and powerful spirits were blurred, which is still reflected in the Nissa today, who, despite Christianity, continue to be referred to in Danish as husguder, house gods. Today, Nissa reside in homes, traditionally lofts, coming out only during Yuletide, when they must be appeased with offerings of porridge, lest they grow angry and punish the house owner with devious tricks. This practice of offering is a form of sacrifice, descended from the old folkish practice of bloat, itself another word for sacrifice. During the early days of Nissa worship, they were, like all land spirits, sometimes connected with the dead. In this way, Nissa were a part of the wider Germanic practice of ancestor worship. For this reason, Nissa were often said to live in burrow mounds, which is reflected in names such as Haugebunde, meaning mound farmer. As Yule creatures and spirits of the dead, Nissa may always have been related to Odin, and certainly always played a role in Yule, but their modern role in the holiday didn't develop until the 19th century. Here, the Nissa were integrated into the modern Christmas tradition and became bearers of gifts, while increasingly resembling small versions of Santa. Another uniquely northern tradition is that of the Yule Goat, or Julebuk in Danish. During the 19th century, the Yule Goat was the bringer of gifts in the north, before being replaced by the Nissa and Father Christmas. Predating even this tradition was that of men dressing up as the Yule Goat and walking through villages in groups while singing and performing. Like so many rituals, it's difficult to say exactly where and when the Yule Goat came from, but there are many ideas. The first, and perhaps most obvious, is that the Yule Goat represents Thor, whose goat-drawn chariot was one of the many examples of just how heavily identified he was with this animal. Another idea is that the Yule Goat is derived from an even older tradition, shared with other Indo-European people, and that it represents harvest and good fortune. Today, the Yule Goat is a common ornament throughout the Nordics, being particularly important in Sweden, where a giant hay statue called Gävlebocken is erected in the city of Gävle every year. This colossal goat is famous for having been victim to arson a frankly hilarious amount of times. Since first being built in 1966, the goat has been damaged 37 times, despite the presence of a fire station. In other words, in the time the tradition has been going, the goat has been burned down more years than not. Having spoken now of two mostly Nordic Christmas traditions, the Nissa and the Yule Goat, let's instead look at one found almost exclusively in Britain. This is the Yule Log. The Yule Log, also called a Yule Clog, is a log chosen to be burnt during the celebration. Traditionally, the log has been a very large chunk of wood, burning over a period of several days, during which it was believed to ward off foul spirits and ailments. The precise origins of the Yule Log are unknown, but it has long been assumed to descend from the Anglo-Saxon folk faith. Comparing the practice of the log to what we know about Germanic religion, certain parallels do seem to emerge, which might help to explain its origin. Wood, or more correctly, trees, filled a central role in the faith of the Teutons. And in this way, the Yule Log may be related to another key part of Christmas.
Okay, and that was a little clip. That was the second part of the dramatic origins of Yule. Hope that was enjoyable right there. Shieldmane is saying, I want the 12 Days of Chimp Out song. And that song was pretty humorous. It really was. Yeah. Okay, so I just wanted to read a little bit more about the solstice. Yeah, a little bit about this. So here are some facts about the winter solstice, the shortest day of the year. And it starts with showing a picture of people at Stonehenge. I know that is a popular location for people doing solstice activity. So it happens a specific brief moment. So this year, in 2019, it happened at 4:19. December 4:19 a.m. at UTC, Coordinated Universal Time. So I guess this morning at 4:19 was when it happened. Actually, no, wait, take that back. For those of us in Eastern Standard Time, so that would be people who are in my time zone, it's happening at 11:19 p.m. So we're actually not there yet. We have about 2 hours and 2 minutes until that happens. And this is a time of death and rebirth, like I was saying earlier. The seeming death of the light and the very real threat of starvation over the winter months would have weighed heavily on early societies who held varied solstice celebrations and rites meant to herald the return of the sun and hope for new life. Scandinavian and Germanic pagans lit fires and may have burned Yule logs as a symbolic means of welcoming back the light. Cattle and other animals were slaughtered around midwinter, followed by feasting on what was the last fresh meat for several months. The modern Druidic celebration of Alban Arthen reveres the death of the old sun and the birth of the new sun. Also, the shortest day of the year marks discovery of new and strange worlds. It says that the pilgrims arrived supposedly at Plymouth Rock on December 21st, 1620. Interesting for that. And they're also saying that the Apollo 8 spacecraft launched in the same day in 1968. The word solstice translates roughly to sun stands still. Solstice derives from the Latin scientific term solstitium, containing sol, which means sun, and the past participle system of sistere, meaning to make stand. This comes from the fact that the sun's position in the sky relative to the horizon at noon, which increases and decreases throughout the year, appears to pause in the days surrounding the solstice. In modern times, we view the phenomenon of the solstice from the position of space and the earth relative to the sun. Earlier people, however, were thinking about the sun's trajectory, how long it stayed in the sky, and what sort of light it cast. And again, mentioning Stonehenge, Stonehenge is aligned to the sunset on the winter solstice. Pretty cool. The primary axis of the megalithic monument is oriented to the setting of the sun, while Newgrange, another structure built around the same time as Stonehenge, lines up with the winter solstice sunrise. Some have theorized that the position of the sun was of religious significance to the people who built Stonehenge, while other theories hold that the monument is constructed along natural features that happen to align with it. The purpose of Stonehenge is still subject to debate, but its importance on the winter solstice continues in the modern era as thousands of pagans, they're saying hippies and other types of enthusiasts, gather there every year to celebrate the occasion. Ancient Romans celebrated reversals at the midwinter festival of Saturnalia or Bacchanalia. This holiday, which began as a festival to honor the agricultural god Saturn, was held to commemorate the dedication of his temple in 497 BCE. It quickly became a time of widespread revelry and debauchery in which societal roles were overturned, with masters serving their slaves and servants being allowed to insult their masters. Mask wearing and play acting were also part of Saturnalia's reversals, with each household and electing a king, misrule. Saturnalia was gradually replaced by Christmas throughout the Roman Empire, but many of its customs survive as Christmas traditions. Some traditions believe that the dark spirit walks the earth on the winter solstice. The Iranian festival of Yalda is celebrated on the longest night of the year. And remember that Iran, many, many years ago, was Aryan. Iran, land of the Aryans. In pre-Islamic times, it heralded the birth of Mithra, the ancient sun god, and his triumph over darkness. Zoroastrian lore holds that evil spirits wander the earth, and the forces of the destructive spirit, Ariham, are strongest on this long night. People are encountered to stay up most of the night in the company of one another, eating, talking, and sharing poetry and stories in order to avoid any brushes with dark entities. Beliefs about the presence of evil on the longest night are also echoed in Celtic and Germanic folklore. Well, of course, because they're all related, because they're all Aryan. Some thought the world would end on the 2012 winter solstice. December 12, 2012, that was, I remember all that stuff. There was also the Y2K thing, too, of 2000. But December 21, 2012 corresponds to the date 130.0.0. in the Mesoamerican long count calendar used by the ancient Maya, marking the end of a 5,126-year cycle. Some people feared this juncture would bring about the end of the world or some other cataclysmic event. Others took a more New Agey view and believed it heralded the birth of a new era of deep transformation for the Earth and its inhabitants. Well, as far as I know, that was when the age went from the Piscean Age to the Aquarian Age. So that would be another marker there. In the end, these things didn't occur, leaving the world to turn through the winter solstice indefinitely, or at least as the long sun lasts. Yeah, I remember that whole freak out about the world ending. More fear-mongering type of filth. No surprise there. But just, yeah, interesting to see that again, how this all ties together. Okay, so I think we'll just take a little bit of a music break now. So, Sean, if you would mind playing a vintage song for us, a vintage Christmas song.
Track. He's got a rhythm in his feet, but nothing in his sack. He's a boogie-woogie Santa Claus, boogie-woogie Santa Claus. The boogie-woogie Santa comes to town every Christmas day. He lives up in the mountain like a hermit in a cave. Never had a haircut, never took a shave. Boogie-woogie Santa Claus, boogie-woogie Santa Claus. The boogie-woogie Santa will boogie all your blues. Tree or candy for your socks. When he starts a boogie, the whole town rocks. Rock, Mr. Santa. For joy on Christmas morn with the boogie woogie Santa Claus, boogie woogie Santa Claus. The boogie woogie Santa will boogie all your blues away.
Yeah, we're back from that that music right there. So yeah, let's see what else I can discuss. Incense was another part of Yule in the smells of frankincense and myrrh. Those were, I think, things that the JC child, the Jesus child, was supposedly given, right? But these have a Yule backing, as well as the smells of cinnamon, clove, and orange. Pine and bayberry were also used for their more resinous and woodsy smell. And then for an altar, besides having candles, other things would be there, like you'd put out pieces of cake or ale on elaborate dishware, as well as a platter, perhaps, with flowers, a chalice of silver, gold, or crystals. This is a time of year for, you know, offerings and stuff like that. Perhaps that's the origin of, you know, leaving out cookies or something like that to Santa. It could be the origin of perhaps leaving out, you know, ale and cakes and things like that to the gods. That could be the origin of leaving out cookies and stuff like that for Father Christmas. Quite possible. Of course, that was always, you know, people's parents taking bites of the cookies and stuff like that. But still, I guess it's exciting for a child to come downstairs in the morning and to actually think that Santa bit into something and was there and fit down the chimney. When you think about the whole story, though, as a youngster, that you believed that this large man came down the chimney with a huge sack of gifts, it just doesn't really seem very plausible, I guess. But I guess as a child, it's nice to have those whimsical thoughts and things like that. So if anyone would like to call in this evening, I'll give out the number. It's 512-487-7226. If you want to call in and add some information about Yule or Christmas, or perhaps maybe share a memory or a tradition that you engage in for Yule or Christmas, feel free to do that. Yeah. Okay, and let's see, we have a couple of minutes left, so I will hold off on playing the next clip. And I was also thinking about this in regards to the name Santa. Santa, of course, being, I guess, an anagram of Satan, right? S-A-T-A-N. Yeah, it is. That's right, of course. But I think of this word that's used in Kundalini yoga, and that word is Satnam, S-A-T-N-A-M. And I think of that word because that word means truth is my name, but it sounds very much like Santa. It's basically Santa plus M. So I always wondered if that was actually related. And I know that, of course, Satan just means adversary. So that's actually a good thing in a certain way. Not that I'm saying we should be satanic, but yeah, I'm wondering how that fits in with the Kundalini yoga word Satnam, truth is my name, and then Santa, and then Satan and stuff like that. I don't know. All things that I've thought of before. And I also saw somewhere when someone was describing Santa, they were just, this was a good description, I thought, of Santa. And they were saying that a modern day Santa is a combination of Odin with a bit of like that old school St. Nicholas, as well as the Green Man and a Siberian shaman. I think that's kind of a good representation of Santa. I always like if I happen to see someone playing Santa and they have real whiskers as opposed to the fake beard. Yeah, just not really a good look. I guess if you have a whiskers like that, you have to keep that look year-round, though, if you want to play Santa. You can't just launch into it, otherwise you'd need to be wearing the fake beard. Yeah. All right. We'll be right back.
Obscenity invades every area of our lives, however much we do to try and repel it. Fear of the obscene is expressed in networks of vigilance, such as campaigns for public morality. Legislation about obscenity persists, and calls for its extension are frequent. But the fascination of the forbidden is irresistible, and obscenity can seem the nucleus of English eloquence. The English were once labelled les gardames by the French. Since the 1960s, they have been les fuck-offs. And among the many mentions of English-speaking culture is that snarling expletive, a two-word anthem for the Anglosphere. The Language Wars by Henry Hitchings.
And we are back and just talking a little bit about the connection between Santa and Satan and Satnam and all that stuff. It makes you wonder what that really is about, because, of course, in the Abrahamic Bible, you have the Yahweh God, which is a pretty foul creature. And then you have his adversary, Satan or the devil. And that seems like a dialectic. I don't know. It all seems kind of like crap. Who knows? But I think what Sean is saying is I don't need outside influence. I'm kind of in the same boat with that. Just do what aligns with nature and just kind of, you know, go with that. I don't need someone in the sky to tell me what to do, essentially. Yeah. Okay. So let's see. How about we play the final origins of Yule, Sean, if you don't mind, the final clip about the Germanic origins of Yule, please?
Today, the Christmas tree is arguably the most important holiday tradition. It is the literal center of the festivities, around which people dance, sing, and place presents. Neo-pagans have often been quick to claim that Christmas trees are an obvious pagan inheritance, and so it may be somewhat surprising to learn that this really isn't quite true. Christmas trees, as we know them today, first seem to have appeared in the Rhineland region of Germany during the early 18th century. From there they spread, first to the rest of Germany, and then throughout the world. It seems unlikely that this was the actual origin of the tradition, however, and like so many local customs, the Christmas tree may very well have existed for at least a century, if not more, before first being noted. It's even possible that other traditions similar to the Rhineland Christmas trees existed locally throughout the Germanic world before all being absorbed into the unified concept of the holiday tree, but this is pure speculation. What is known is that trees, as I've mentioned earlier, played a vital role in the Germanic faith. The center of the Germanic universe was Yggdrasil, the world tree, or Axis Mundi. The nine worlds were nested within the branches of this vast tree, and at its base lies the Well of Wood, the waters of time and destiny. Yggdrasil was, of course, a metaphysical concept, rather than a tangible object, and as such, its symbolism permeated the world itself. Every tree was potentially a representation of the Great Ash, a myth made manifest, and for this reason, trees were often viewed as sacred by the old Teutons. It was common for trees to be placed in the middle of courtyards and religious sites, thus defining that area through the presence of a cosmic axis around which it could revolve. Here, a parallel with the Christmas tree immediately stands out. Like the world ash and sacred trees of folkish faith, the Christmas trees stand as centers of the holiday, literally in the very middle of the festival. It is, as mentioned before, the point around which people dance, around which they sing, around which they move and celebrate. In other words, during the course of the holiday, the Christmas tree is the Axis Mundi. Another aspect of the Christmas tree that harkens back to mighty Yggdrasil is its position in the yearly cycle. Yggdrasil's roots extend into the world navel, the Well of Urd, which also symbolizes the past. Here, they ferry upwards the waters of fate. Through the great trunk and branches, these waters, again symbolic for fate, make their ways into the world. There, they affect Midgard and the people in it, but the opposite is also true. In the world, we have the ability to influence the waters of fate, and soon enough, they drip back down into the well, into the past. Put more simply, fate is predefined, but our actions at present can feed back into the past, giving us a form of autonomy, the ability to influence fate. These feedbacks are a cycle, and in this way, the Christmas tree, standing at the point when the end of the year feeds into its birth, when fall feeds into spring, is likewise symbolic of this endless cycle of renewal inherent in the concept of cyclical time. Regardless of the exact origins of the Christmas tree, one thing is certain. When first it originated in Germany, it was not a foreign import. It was, like all good traditions, born and shaped in its native land and culture. Even if the Christmas tree itself does not extend all the way back into the old faith, it is, nonetheless, deeply rooted in a Germanic worldview. That, perhaps, is the most important lesson out of all of this. Though the conversion to Christianity throughout the Germanic world was essentially complete by the start of the 12th century, the spirit of the folk faith never went away. The Germanic peoples have always had a strong will for independence and tradition, and this again made itself manifest in the ways they carried their old beliefs and customs into the new religion, often against the wishes of the priests and bishops. Christmas today is a Christian holiday. There's no doubt about that, nor any reason to contest it. At the same time, however, it also remains Yule. Angels may now fly through the northern skies, but the heart of winter has not changed. Not since those very first Teutons began honoring the gods at Yule, all those many years ago. To look out into the midwinter night is to gaze past the veil of modernity and out into a world where spirits still rule those frozen hills. Just be weary and strong of heart, for one never knows when the ghostly riders will sound their wild horns in the night.
Okay, and that was our final clip on the Germanic origins of Yule. I hope that was interesting. Nice to see just the true origins of this holiday. It really is a white holiday. There is no doubt about that. Even though many people in the world today celebrate it, don't have these racial roots associated with it, this is definitely our holiday. So we shouldn't forget that. Not that it's we should, you know, demonize people who are celebrating it who aren't white, but nevertheless, we should be aware that it is our holiday. So now I wanted to go over this article that I just found, just a little bit ago. It's about some Christmas ornaments that, some people don't like. They're complaining about it. So I'm going to have Sean join me now, and we're going to discuss this this story about these Auschwitz Christmas ornaments. Are you there, Sean?
Merry Easter. Wrong season.
Wrong holiday.
Yeah. How are you, Tabs?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm doing all right. Yeah, really been enjoying the show, loving the music, especially
thank you.
The information that you're delivering right in between all of this great music. No, great stuff.
Thank you. Yeah, so this little article about these ornaments that, selling, quote, Christmas ornaments. This comes from the Twitter of Auschwitz Memorial. Selling, quote, Christmas ornaments with images of Auschwitz does not seem appropriate. Auschwitz on a bottle opener is rather disturbing and disrespectful. We ask on Amazon to remove the items from these suppliers. And I clicked on this link, and I see that this website, or this purveyor on Amazon, rather, they're selling every single historical monument you can imagine on an ornament.
So here they are, out of one side of their mouths. They're telling us that what happened in Auschwitz was a disgusting thing, even though it's never been proven. But anyway, they're saying it's a disgusting thing, but yet they're willing to put it on the bottle cap. So you're capping open a beer, and you're like, oh, that there's people being gassed on my beer bottle. Unbelievable, you know. And this is coming from the same company that is making little girls' T-shirts that says, come
Daddy's
in me, daddy.
Slut.
It's disgusting. Exactly. It's absolutely disgusting. This company needs to be boycotted. It needs to be burned to the ground.
It's just ridiculous that they're making this as big as on par with the child thing. And the child thing was obviously inexcusable. I mean, this is just a picture of something. The other thing was outright pornographic.
Yeah.
And abusive. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, but who wants to open a bottle? Who wants to celebrate their festive season with, oh, I think I'm going to have a beer today. You crack open the beer and then you just go, oh, Isn't that where the people so-called got gassed? Well, I'm not having 6 million beers tonight.
I know. It could even be like a Weight Watchers device, you know, this,
This is crazy. You know, this world has seriously gone insane. You know, remember the Holocaust. Remember the Holocaust. What can we do? We need new ideas, Ive. Oh, we'll put Auschwitz on the beer bottles and the bottle tops. Hey, how about we even start putting them on babies' diapers? Right? Like, seriously.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen these like memes before, these cartoons where it's like a message being blasted from space about it. I mean, it's just like, they never want to stop the advertisement. I mean, especially now on Christmas, like a sacred, holy time of reflection for the year. Like, this is coming out. Like, this almost seems like kind of like when you see those cockeyed swastikas like spray painted somewhere. Like, is this deliberate? You know what I mean? Like, is this, I don't know.
Yeah, I know. You know, I was actually talking to Maiden and Josh in the chat room there earlier, and they were oh so sensitive when I said that, you know what, I wouldn't be surprised if Satan Claus was like a Catholic priest that squeezed himself down the chimneys to get to the kids. And they were like, oh, mm-hmm. That's just wrong. And I'm thinking, are you joking? This is what they've been doing. They've been basically trying to molest kids and everything because it all comes from Jesus, right? Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, yeah. Are you kidding me? No, this is the best time to tell the story because all of these priests right now are trying to preach Christmas, Christmas, onto children and all sorts of things. And this is what we're seeing with the Jews as well. You know, the Jews are pushing anything they can into the festive season as the Catholics push into the festive season as well. No, you know what? This is the best time to talk about it. Now, I'm not saying we just push it. We've got to enjoy Christmas as well. You know, as you and I were talking about behind the scenes, this is a festive season, you know, and I rather call it the Yule season as well. But white Western civilization knows it as the Christmas season. And if you said Yule to half the population, they wouldn't know what you're talking about.
They wouldn't.
No, they just don't look past their nose, Tabitha. So what happens is I like to make people alert, but on the same token, Maiden made a good point, which was, you know, we just don't want to hear the whole fact about that during Christmas. But I think sometimes you've got to use the season, for the reason, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I think that sometimes you can let people know, maybe in a more of a positive manner, that all the stuff they really like about Christmas have these ancient racial roots, and to let them know that. I mean, that would make anybody proud, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, and, you know, there's that side to it. You know, we're all from Europe. Like, I'm from Ireland, you're from Italy, and you know, that we've got people from Scotland that listen, and then we've got people from Switzerland and all of that. And we need to go back to our roots and enjoy the festive season as how Europe created it. Definitely. It's all a part of white Western civilization, but we also at least have to recognize, what all of these religions have been doing now. That are against us, because don't let your guard down. Just because it's Christmas, don't dare let your guard down. Don't hand your child to a priest just because it's Christmas. Oh, well, because he's part of a church, it's a part of Christ Mass. Well, then you think you can just hand your child over and trust him. No, don't do that. You know, keep your children safe to your heart. Be yourself. I don't need a religion. I don't need a group. I'm not pagan. I'm not religious. I'm not anything. I'm just Sean. And if anybody tries to mess with my kids, there's going to be trouble, you know. But in the meantime, yeah, I mean, Merry Christmas.
Yeah, exactly. Merry Christmas. And I always like the Merry Christmas, not the Happy Holidays. That's so generic. And I've noticed that in like my lifetime, even seeing cards and how people greet. Like, now everyone's afraid to say Merry Christmas because someone's going to be offended. You know, these professional offendees, they hear Merry Christmas. They're like, well, what about my holiday? Like, this has always been the Christmas season. Like, every other holiday that falls around this time of year doesn't have the same sacred significance for those people as Christmas does. Christmas is really the reason for the season, no doubt about it.
That's right. And you know, as I don't know whether I discussed this with you. I think I discussed it with you in the chat room, but not actually, here on air. The professional offendee, term was coined by Jimmy X.
Yes, you mentioned that.
I did. Okay. Yeah. I wasn't sure.
Yeah, it
had never been heard about before until Jimmy X was using that term over there on Radio X back in the days of Oracle back in 2009. But you're absolutely right. Now, talking about a professional offendees and Christmas, what happens is in the Royal Children's Hospital in Melbourne at one stage, the Muslims were actually trying to get the crosses taken off the wall. There was a forum, a paper forum, not one on the computer. There was a paper forum asking whether the crosses should be taken off the walls. And when I walked in to visit a friend of mine's child that was in the Royal Children's Hospital that was ill, I looked at this forum and I just pulled the paper down. And I just thought, you've got to be beeping kidding me. And I just ticked no, and I was vocal about it at the same time. See, I've got a habit of when I'm typing tabs, and when I'm typing to you or to Maiden or to Mike, to Jasper, whoever it may be, JB, Set Free Hoosier, I'm talking while I type. It's just a habit of mine. So what happens is when I walk up to a forum and I see this BS, I just went, no, and then it says, what is the reason for your comment? And I wrote, definitely not. This is Australia. This is not Islam. This is not, and I'm talking while I say it. And this girl's looking at me and I look up and I thought, oh crap, I'm talking. And she's looking me right in the face as if, really? And I went like, this is ridiculous. Are you joking? You're going to take the Christian crosses off the world? Well, off the walls? I said, listen carefully. I said, I'm not religious. I said, but this country was founded on Christianity. Don't dare come to our country and tell us what religion, what philosophy, what walk of life we should be. You, if we go to your country, we respect your race, your culture, your everything, your religion, the whole lot. Don't come to ours and disrespect ours. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Who the hell are they to like tell us like how to dictate? That would be like to go and walk into someone else's house and say, no, 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 you got to do it this way. Like,
could you imagine? Hell? Could you imagine? Let's pretend I was religious for a second, right? With the way with what aggression I am, hey, sit in the back seat and shut up, Shield Maiden. With what aggression I have, right? Shield Maiden knows me too well, and I know her too well. What happens is, could you imagine if I was religious and I had a cross on the wall, and somebody, some Muslim, walked into me and went la 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 la, take the cross off the wall. Right? There's no way it would happen. I'd turn around and I'd go, oh, you better be joking. You better be joking. Or shit is going, pardon my French, because this is your show. I can beep that out later if you want.
But no, it's fine.
What happens is, you know, or something's going to happen. You better walk out my front door right now. Don't you la-la-la-la me.
Yeah, who has the right to do that? I mean, that would be like if we all went over there and said, you know, this is how we want it. Like, they would tell us to go fuck ourselves.
Would behead us. They would absolutely behead us. Over there, you start messing with their religion. Like, you take a look at the Japanese. You know, they've got that saying, gaijin, which means effing foreigner. In their own language, it sort of means, like, scum foreigner. So what happens is when they employed what were they called? Oh, bugger. I can't remember it. They called it, forgotten it. Anyway, I'll look it up another time and I'll drop it below the link here. What happens is, they employed a group of people to, behead anybody that tried to take over their race or culture. They were an ancient group. And we're talking almost back in the days, of when the caravans were traveling across the Arab wastelands. This is how far back it went. But seriously, you know, when we go to these different countries, we wouldn't dare. And I'll tell you, there's two parts to this, Tabs. And correct me if I'm wrong, because you're pretty skilled in the esoteric and everything like that. But there's two parts to this. One part is that if you go to the country, to a third world country or a second world country or anything, and they've got their customs, their savagery is to behead you. Then we've got the second part, which is this. We whites just try not to do it. We've always tried not to step on other cultures' toes if we can help it. You know, so, for instance, I would not dare go to Japan, knowing full well that they don't like foreigners, and just live there. I'll go to holiday and say, hey, I'm just here to holiday. Nice to meet you.
Yeah.
You know, but I wouldn't go over to there to live. As the white mentality, especially, you know, like over the, like 50 years ago, would just never have done it. But yet now it seems that our communist, Marxist a-holes that run government will have every culture and race come here and just allow them to step on us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that whites have always kind of had that politeness where they don't want to step on people. They kind of have the better boundaries of other races, too, if you look at it. Like, even the way, like, they kind of keep a distance, like, when talking and stuff. Like, I mean, I just feel like other races just don't have that boundary. And if they want to relate that way to themselves, like, that's fine and dandy. Just, you know, do it on your own turf somewhere. But whites always have that politeness where they don't just kind of, like, walk in somewhere and set up shop.
Exactly, you know, and in some ways, that's what's been part of destroying white Western civilization. You take a look at the phone call. I'm cancelling the phone calls as of next year, as I discussed with you.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason being, I want people to know, is because when you've got Antifa, like that dirty, disgusting, dirty Damon, aka Major Hicks, being brave enough to call in, to have the testicular fortitude to call in and try and challenge us. But you don't have our own whites calling in to make calls to Tabitha's show, Mike's show. Why am I paying $50 a year to keep this number? Look, if you're not gonna grow the testicles to call in, why am I paying the $50? My own Australians that listen to my show don't call in. Your own Americans that listen to this show, there's only one, Set Free Hoosier, besides Mike, of course, when we want to do a little bit of comedy, right? It's just, it's not working. So if whites have become so emasculated, whether it be Australians, whether it be Americans, English, whatever, that they can't even call in and add, you know, contribute to these broadcasts, well, I'm cutting it off because I'm not paying $50 to hold up the Antifa. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, you know? I know what you mean. I mean, the only calls we've had, at least since I've been with this network, have all been trolls, with the exception of Set Free and, you know, Mike doing his calls. And I wish people would call in who were genuine and wanted to add substance to the broadcast. That would be wonderful if people actually called in, but no one does call in.
No, I know. I know. It's really, really sad to see, you know, to see my white Western civilization fall. We actually had that stupid, dirty Damon try to call in tonight. And of course, my afternoon. And of course, I screened the call. I picked it up. And of course, all he can do is his typical, So I just went, back in his ear and I hung up on him. And of course, he hasn't called back. This is ridiculous. You know, where are the calls? Seriously. You know,
for $50 a year to hear that? I mean, come on.
$50 a year just to hear. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's ridiculous. I mean, it's really like, it's a sign of something not good, though. I mean, maybe in the new year, I mean, like you said, you're going to get rid of it, so I get that. But I mean, it really would be nice if people did call in.
Well, it finishes nice on January. It finishes, just so people know, it finishes on January 16th. So if they want to get something going here. However, let me put this warning out to people, and I don't mean to destroy your Yule show here.
No, not at all.
I will say this. Don't just call in after the 6th or before the 16th so that you get me to pay the $50 to keep the line on. Because that's what's happened in the past. I've had some of the Aussies call in the past. And then when I pay the extra money thinking, okay, they're going to start calling in, all of a sudden they stop calling in. So if you think for a moment that I'm going to just replenish the $50 for next year's call-in line, you've got another thing coming. You're going to have to make me a promise, ladies and gentlemen, that you're going to call in to Tabitha, You're going to give her, you're going to contribute to her show, given that she contributes to your life when she does these broadcasts. The same with Mike, the same with me. If you can give us a promise that you're going to call in and just grow some testicular fortitude again, and for those of you girls out there, some vaginal fortitude, then right on. We'll keep this this line. That was what the word I was looking for the other day, Tabs, vaginal fortitude.
That's it, as That's opposed it. To ovarian.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, instead of ovarian, yeah. Vaginal fortitude.
Gotcha.
Yep, so if you can grow a bit of that, ladies and gentlemen, then sure, I'll pay the $50 for the line. Otherwise, you know, I'm not doing it. It's just, it's ridiculous. In fact, we've got an incoming call now. Let's just, let's humor the call, shall we? Let's
okay.
Humor the call. Okay, what's your name, where are you calling from? Caller, what's your name, where are you calling from? Hold on. I think I might have that one. Just bear with me, caller. Bear with me. Stay with me.
Hola.
Okay. Caller, what's your name? Hola. Where are you calling from? Hello? Yeah, okay. That's always fun. Yeah. Caller, you there?
Oh, Wolfie just said he tried to call, but no answer.
He actually just started talking while he was on. Yeah, okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Try again. Try to call in again.
Yeah. Well, we've only got literal. We don't even have the time. We're about to run out.
We are.
Yeah, we're about to finish. So, well, thanks for trying, Wolfie.
Are.
Thanks for trying,
yeah,
mate.
Thank you, Sean, for joining me, and a happy Yule and Merry Christmas to everybody.
Yeah, you have a good Yule. I know that you're going to be with family and everything. You take care of yourself, Tabs.
Yeah. Thank you. Good night, everybody, or a good day.
Now an army may be likened to water, for just as flowing water avoids the heights and hastens to the lowlands, so an army should avoid strength and strike weakness. And as water shapes its flow in accordance with the ground, so an army manages its victory in accordance with the situation of the enemy. And as water has no constant form, there are in warfare no constant conditions. Thus, one able to win the victory by modifying his tactics in accordance with the enemy situation may be said to be divine. Of the five elements, water, fire, metal, wood, and earth, none is always predominant. Of the four seasons, none lasts forever. Of the days, some are long and some are short, and the moon waxes and wanes. That is also the law of employing troops.
A dream appears, you belong to me. I'll be so jungle when it's wet with rain. Just remember till you're home again, you belong to
Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deception. We'll be right back.
That's right. Stick around, ladies and gentlemen, because we're going to be playing a little bit more of Tabitha's Your Music that she didn't get time to play. WTFR.
Like other little boys in your neighborhood, don't wait till the night before Christmas to be good. And dolls with curls are for the little girls who do the things they should. So don't wait till the night before Christmas to be good. You can't fool Mr. Santa Claus, he knows right from wrong. And you can't be right for just one night, you gotta be right along. You'd love to see another Christmas tree where the old one stood. So don't wait till the night before Christmas to be good. Santa Claus, he knows right from wrong. And you can't be right for just one night, you gotta be right along.
Nothing sweeter, finer, when it's nice and cold. I can hold my baby closer to me and collect the kisses that I do me. I love the winter weather, 'cause I got my love to keep me warm.
of the winter weather, so the two of us can get together. There's nothing sweeter or finer. When it's nice and cold, I can hold my baby closer to me and collect the kisses that are due me. I love the winter weather, 'cause I got my love to keep me warm.
I love the winter weather, so the two of us can get together. There's nothing sweeter, finer, when it's nice and cold. I can hold my baby closer to me and collect the kisses that I do me. I love the winter weather, 'cause I got my love to keep me warm.
Happy holiday, while the merry bells keep ringing, may your every wish come true. Happy holiday, happy holiday, may the calendar keep bringing happy holidays to you.
If your nerves are wearing thin, pack your load down the road and come to Holiday Inn.
If the traffic noise affects you like a squeaky violin, kick your cares down the stairs, come to Holiday Inn.
If you can't find someone who will set your heart awhirl, take your car and motor to the home of boy meets girl.
If you're laid up with a breakdown, throw away your vitamins.
Don't get worse.
Grab your nurse and come to Holiday Inn.
Happy holidays, happy holidays. While the merry bells are ringing, may your every wish come true. Happy holidays, happy holidays. May the calendar keep bringing happy holiday to you.
Happy holidays, happy holidays. While the merry bells keep ringing, may your every wish come true. Happy holidays, happy holidays. May the calendar keep ringing happy holidays.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, where the treetop glistens and the chill. Christmas card I write, may your days be merry and bright, and may all your Christmases be treetops glisten and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas.
Day.
I'm aboard a butterfly and take off on the breeze. Let your worries flutter by and do the things you please. In a land where dollar bills are falling off the trees, on a dreamer's holiday. Every day for breakfast there's a dish of scrambled stars, and for luncheon you'll be munching rainbow candy bars. You'll be living a la mode on Jupiter or Mars, on a dreamer's holiday. Make it a long vacation. Time there is plenty of. You need no reservation. Just bring along the one you love. Help yourself to happiness and sprinkle it with mirth. Close your eyes and concentrate and dream for all you're worth. You will feel terrific when you get back down to earth from a dreamer's holiday.
Climb aboard a butterfly and take off on the breeze. Let your worries flutter by and do the things you please.
In a land where dollar bills are falling off the trees, on a dreamer's holiday.
For breakfast, there's a dish of scrambled stars, and for luncheon, you'll be munching rainbow candy bars.
You'll be living a la mode on Jupiter, Mars, on a dreamer's holiday. Come on, we're gonna make it a long vacation. Time there is plenty of. You need no reservation. Just bring along the one you love. Help yourself to happiness and sprinkle it with mirth. Close your eyes and concentrate and dream for all you're worth.
You will feel terrific.
Get back down to earth from a dreamer's holiday.
Silver bells, silver bells. It's Christmas time in the city. Ring-a-ling, hear them ring. Soon it will be Christmas Day.
City sidewalks, busy sidewalks, dressed in holiday style. In the air there's a feeling of Christmas. Children laughing, people passing, meeting smile after smile. And on every street corner you hear
silver bells.
Silver bells,
silver bells,
it's Christmas time in the city. Ring-a-ling,
ring-a-ling,
hear them ring,
hear them ring.
Soon it will be Christmas Day.
Strings of street lights, even stoplights, blink a bright red and green as the shoppers rush home with the treasures. Hear the snow crunch, see the kids' bunch. This is Santa's big scene. And above all this bustle, you hear silver bells,
silver bells,
silver bells. It's Christmas time in the city. Ring-a-ling,
ring-a-ling,
hear them ring,
hear them ring.
Soon it will be Christmas Day.
Ring-a-ling,
silver bells,
silver bells.
You see, it's cold outside.
I really can't stay.
But baby, it's cold outside.
I gotta go away.
But baby, it's cold outside.
This evening has been
hoping that you'd drop in.
So very nice.
I'll hold your hands. They're just like
my
ice.
My mother will start to worry.
Beautiful, what's your hurry?
My father will be pacing the floor.
Listen to the fireplace
now,
roar.
Now really, I've got to scurry.
Beautiful, please don't hurry.
Well, maybe just a half a drink
Put
more.
Put some records on while I pour.
The neighbors might
But
think.
Baby, it's bad out there.
Say, what's in the street?
No cabs to be had out there.
I wish I knew
your
how.
Your eyes are like starlight now.
To break the spell.
I'll take your hat. Your hair looks swell.
I ought to say no, no, no,
Mind
sir.
If I move in closer?
At least I'm gonna say that I tried.
What's the sense in hurting my pride?
I really can't
oh, baby,
stay.
Baby, don't hold out.
Oh,
baby,
but
it's cold outside. Nice and comfortable in here, isn't it, honey?
Yeah. I simply must
but
go.
But baby, it's cold outside.
The answer is
but
no.
But baby, it's cold outside.
The welcome has
How
been
lucky that you dropped in.
So nice and warm.
Look out the window at that storm.
My sister will be suspicious.
Gosh, your lips look delicious.
My brother will be there at the door.
Waves upon a tropical shore.
My maiden aunt's mind is vicious.
Your lips are delicious.
Well, maybe just a cigarette more.
Never such a blizzard before.
I gotta get
but
home.
But baby, you'd freeze out there.
Say, lend me your
it's
coat.
It's up to your knees out there.
You've really been
I
grand.
I thrill when you touch my hand.
Oh, don't you see?
How can you do this thing to me?
There's bound to be talk tomorrow.
Think of my lifelong
At
sorrow.
At least there will be plenty implied.
If you caught pneumonia and died,
I really can't
get
stay.
Over that old doubt.
Oh,
baby,
but
it's cold. You know it's cold outside?
Yeah.
That's just wrong when she does that. Yeah. Wrong, I tell you. God Almighty. We're soon to end the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, we do hope that you've enjoyed it. Tabitha done a great 2 hours there. And we've been playing some of her Christmas music. There'll be one last song, I guess, around that. And then I'll be fading up the music and we'll get the show up on the website. Thanks for listening to WTFR. Merry Christmas.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. Next year all our troubles will be out of sight. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay. Next year all our troubles will be miles away. Once again, as in olden days, happy golden days of yore. Until then, we'll have to muddle through somehow. So have yourself a merry little Christmas
now. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Have yourself a merry Christmas.